Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. American higher education is certainly at a crossroads. Cost-minded students and their families and the public at large are questioning the worth of a college education, even as study after study shows how important it is to economic and social mobility. And as elite institutions trim financial aid and change other business practices in search of more sustainable business models, racial and economic stratification in American higher education is only growing. In the new book, American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know, Goldie Blumenstich, who has been reporting on higher education trends for 25 years, guides readers through the forces and trends that have brought the education system to this point and highlights some of the ways they will reshape America's colleges in the years to come. She'll be speaking in our region tonight. We'll talk about that in a moment, and it's a pleasure to welcome Goldie Blumenstich to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, for inviting me in.
Very nice to have you here. So give us a little, give us an idea of your background and what brought you to take a look at this crisis.
Well, I'd been reporting at the Chronicle of Higher Education for about 25 years, when actually I wasn't looking to write the book. I got a phone call from Oxford University Press folks who had been reading a lot of things in the Chronicle and other newspapers about some of the issues facing colleges today and facing families, affordability and costs and the like. Also some of the challenges colleges themselves were facing financially. And they said, well, there's a crisis out there. Why don't you write a book? And actually, I resisted it at first.
Okay. So there... The title of the book, there is a question mark.
I put a question mark in there deliberately.
American Higher Education in Crisis. So do you believe there is a crisis? And I guess it all comes down to how you define crisis.
It all depends on the definition. That's always the case, right? And also, I think if you look at things in the aggregate, absolutely there is a crisis. The biggest trends point to problems with higher education, for families and for institutions. But the trouble with a lot of the critiques about higher education right now is that they do things in the aggregate and they don't recognize that there are a lot of different kinds of colleges and a lot of different circumstances. And so even when you talk about affordability as an issue, sure, there are places people could be spending, $50,000 a year to send their children to go to college. But there are tons and tons of really affordable options out there. I just looked up the statistics for SUNY today. It's one of the lowest cost tuitions for public colleges in the country. So, and it's well below average in cost. So it's, even some of these affordability questions that get sort of blown out in the headlines, you need to sort of parse them down a little bit. And in the end, when I decided to take on the book, I decided to do that because I understood from my years of reporting at the Chronicle that you can't just look at things in the broad sweep. You have to understand the different kinds of colleges out there and different sets of circumstances.
But it seems like it's all linked, right? I mean, it obviously, when you start talking or playing with the idea of lowering costs for students or coming up with a new rubric as to how it is funded, it's going to it has an effect on the institution as far as its standing, of what the thoughts are about how good of a school it is, where it's going to rank in U.S. News and World Report, and not to mention the education that it's giving the kids.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, broadest trends are definitely affecting all schools, but they're affecting in different ways. But I don't know if it's been as big a story up here in the Northeast as it has been in the South. The small liberal arts college in Virginia, Sweetbriar, just announced it was going to close. Now people are predicting, well, that's the end of small private colleges. Well, perhaps, perhaps not. Most likely, that might be the end of a small private college in rural Virginia that was an all-women school that was unwilling or uninterested in kind of changing its focus or doing some different kinds of approaches that other colleges have adapted to.
So you look at that more as a symptom of, in any marketplace, you have to change with the times. This was a college that was not willing to do that, and they eventually had to close.
It didn't take on some of the, in the Chronicle, we just ran another story a couple days ago about another small college called Newberry College. No, it was co-ed. That didn't make a difference. But it was also struggling, and it did a lot more targeted recruiting. It made a lot more efforts to recruit students out of community colleges, in other words, to take transfer students right away.
Yeah.
And it sort of did some different modeling on its financial aid, and it's increased its enrollment. I will say small colleges in general are more threatened than larger colleges. The economics just don't work as well. And rural colleges are probably generally more threatened than those in urban areas because our country is becoming more urbanized and students, certainly sort of younger students, don't necessarily want to go to those colleges. And the other kind of population of, you know, we have a lot more adult students going to college today. A third of the students in colleges today are over 25, and fewer of those students are in rural areas. More of them are probably in urban areas.
So when we say that the system and that higher education is at a crossroads, what do we need to address then? What do we need to sit down and say, okay, this needs to be something that we look at in totality?
Certainly, I think some of the teaching model is now under stress. I think there's a lot of questions about finding better ways to use technology in the classroom. And I think the challenge for that is to take advantage of technology in a way that will, you know, make the best use of it and not necessarily replace instructors and professors, because, gosh, we don't want to be in a higher education system without professors. That would be awful. But certainly there are advantages in technology that colleges can use right now. There is a cost modeling problem that probably needs to be addressed. If the two main sources of revenue are sort of federal and state funds and family tuitions, and state funds are sort of not growing as fast as most colleges would like, and families are feeling the stress on the tuition side, there's got to be some other sort of revenue models. There's not an obvious answer to that, unfortunately. And I think also are students really learning? There's a lot of effort right now to sort of quantify whether students are actually getting things out of college that we expect them to be getting. There's a big disconnect between the people who are hiring young graduates and they say they're unhappy that the students really don't have the skills to, they don't write well, they don't communicate well. Mm. I don't know if this complaint is really all that new or if we're just hearing it a little bit more now than we used to hear it, but I think colleges are focusing a lot more on outcomes, sort of satisfying their various constituencies. And personally, I hope it's not just to satisfy employers, but to satisfy sort of society as a whole in what, you know, producing graduates that can be good citizens, not just good employees.
I'm an adjunct professor at a local college, a small liberal arts college, and it seems that the concern that I get from the kids is that we're spending all of this money and, okay, but is this going to be worth it in the sense of, am I going to be able to get a job, and will this ultimately be worth the debt that I'm incurring? Now, of course, this does come from communication students and students who are looking at journalism and radio and television broadcasting. So obviously that is a different animal, but I mean, it's certainly a across the board thought of, all right, is this going to be worth what I'm paying?
Yeah, the return on investment, the ROI question. It is question number one for students and families right now, and probably was exacerbated by the financial crisis when things got scarier. I kind of wonder whether, you know, now we're starting to see better prospects for graduates coming out of college.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering if some of that will ease up a little bit. But I think it's a perfectly fair question. I do worry a little bit, as I said, that it gets so narrowly defined as just, can they get a first job? Because that it's important that, you know, no one wants graduates to be out there being unable to pay off their student loans or be unable to start their lives. But at the same time, we need to sort of think about college as something more than just, you know, training students for their first job out of school. We want citizens. We want volunteers in our communities. We want people who can do a lot of things.
I understand that point. I also think, though, and not even the first job as much, is that you have an idea of a career that you want to tackle and to be able to be in it in some way and not to settle for something that is there's paying the dues, but then there's also getting off track of what you want to do professionally.
Right. It's interesting that you're an adjunct, though. By the way, one of the other biggest issues in higher education is this whole adjunctification of the faculty.
And, right.
I mean, you're probably a little bit of an atypical adjunct because you have a day job here.
Right.
But other people are graduating from PhD programs, spending, you know, 6-7 years getting their doctorates, and are finding really difficult time getting on a tenure track position at a university. The roles of tenure has really shrunken over really the generation of the period that I've been working at the Chronicle now. I think I've read statistics that say only about a quarter of all the faculty are tenured or on the tenure track, which means most students at most colleges are being taught by teaching assistants, part-time instructors, people who are excellent instructors but are not really getting the commitment from their institutions that the tenure track and tenure faculty are getting.
And we heard this in the medical institution as well, right? That you go in, you pay all of this money to see the doctor and you never actually get to see the doctor. Or you go into the hospital and this is an outrageous cost, but you're not actually seeing a doctor, you're seeing a physician's assistant or whatever. And not to demean whatever they do, certainly they do a great job. But the question being is, so what strains are we putting on the doctors? What strains are we putting on the full professors that makes it top heavy so that there are more adjuncts working in many institutions than there are full-time professors?
For a lot of institutions, they're prioritizing matters like research, and so they're giving the full professors are getting a little more time to, they're sort of getting opt-out time to do more research and, you know, write their grants and get those kinds of things to raise that sort of money. A lot of colleges are trying to just, it's in some cases they are hiring adjunct professors because they can pay them less, and in some cases they're hiring adjunct professors because they can have a lot more flexibility in the programming. Once you've committed, it is a big commitment to take on a tenured or tenure track professor. You're sort of committing to that person for a career. And we're an adjunct, should your priorities change, you've decided you don't want to teach communications anymore at your university, you know, they don't really have an obligation to you. They can say, adjunct, you know, we're not teaching this course next year, so we're not hiring you. The issue with the adjuncts, though, in many cases, they're very poorly paid.
Right.
And so that just kind of creates a two or three class category of professors on campuses, which ultimately adjunct professors can be excellent instructors, and most likely many of them are, but they don't have office hours in the same way that they don't have the direct connection to the students.
Well, they don't have an office.
Oh, and they don't have an office. Part two.
No, I'm not complaining. No. I'm just saying right. You don't have an office.
Well, no. Well, that means how can a student find you when they want to when they want to meet with their professor? No. That you have to go meet up at the Starbucks. And
right.
You could do that, of course, but it's more challenging.
Yeah, they text you and you show up. it's an interesting, but when you put all, again, when you put all of these issues together, and I'm curious of something that you said earlier, of whether some of this has really been going on for a very long time. We're just it kind of comes to a head, and we look at all of these issues because we're talking about cost.
Well, you know, the cost issue was becoming very salient in the American public even before the financial crisis hit. I remember looking at some surveys that groups like Public Agenda did at the time. And I think a few things happened. I think the student debt number hit that $1 trillion, which, of course, scared the heck out of everybody.
Sure.
And it's over $1 trillion now. But, you know, that's more people having gone to college. And also, so accumulation, eventually, the more people go to college, the bigger the debt rises. There has been a shift along the way. There's fewer, in more cases, students are borrowing more than they used to go to college. And states, in many states, more than half the states now, states used to provide more support for higher education overall, and in more states now, tuition dollars are picking up that slack. So the burden of the cost has shifted a little bit, and this has been happening gradually over time. So things that were sort of on the fault lines were forming before, and now a lot of these issues have come to the head.
One of those issues, of course, is low cost or no cost options, right. And even the president has talked about this in community colleges. I don't know. Can that be maintained? It was at one point.
All right. There were a lot of California had free colleges. Actually, to be honest, in California right now, a lot of community colleges are still effectively free for many students because California has a very elaborate fee waiver system. New York State still has grants for students. I don't know what the finances are of it. I mean, we're a rich country. If we choose to make those priorities, those are the priorities we'll make, right? And
yes.
We could afford that. To me, the interesting thing about that free community college proposal is also just the notion of kind of it resets the dial. Instead of saying K through 12 education is what the country provides, we would be saying K through 14 education is something the country provides. It sort of establishes a whole new standard. I think that's kind of a fascinating issue to discuss for the nation.
The name of the book is American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know. And you're going to be speaking at SUNY Albany tonight.
SUNY tonight at University Hall, 6 p.m.
And you'll be talking about this?
About this book. I'll be on with Professor Kinzer from SUNY Albany. We'll be doing a little conversation about some of these issues in the book.
And it's when you... when you go to schools and you talk, do you find basically that the issues are, I mean, I know there are probably specific issues in some places, but generally, it's the big ones, right? I mean, it's right. There's a universality to that.
There is, definitely. I mean, the faculty are definitely concerned about the faculty issues. At an audience, of a more general audience, there are a lot of concerns about the cost issue. Although I do try to make the point that, you know, people who are in a position and unhappy about paying $50,000 to send their kids to college, if they are in that position to do that, I consider them pretty lucky, because most people in our country can't begin to afford that. I mean, we have to think about sort of affordability in the grand scheme of things. So costs are always, but costs, no matter at whatever level you are, costs are a concern.
Goldie Blumenstick will be speaking tonight at University Hall at the State University of New York at Albany, SUNY Albany campus, at 6 p.m. University Hall. The name of the book, American Higher Education in Crisis, What Everyone Needs to Know. The book is published by Oxford University Press. Goldie, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of the new book, American Higher Education in Crisis. It's published by Oxford. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.